Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Now, going to the last part of verse 11 where it talks about the beast was slain and its body was destroyed, okay? Now, I want you to notice the little horn is what Daniel is going to ask about. Who's the little horn? What's he doing? But I want you to notice in verse 11, the little horn is not slain. What's slain? The beast. Now, the beast represents what? The kingdom. The little horn represents one king. So the whole kingdom is going to be destroyed. Totally destroyed. Now, let me see real quick. I want to ask a question right here in verse 11. This is a very difficult question. You try to think of me and see what you think the problem is. Daniel has a vision. If I'm right, and the little horn refers to the Antichrist that's one day going to come, if the fourth kingdom is the Roman Empire, why does the Bible not see the kingdom from the Roman Empire to the kingdom in the day the Antichrist will come? What happened to South America and China and Japan and the United States and Russia and Czechoslovakia? Where are all those kingdoms in the Bible? Why are they left out? Why does Daniel see only four kingdoms? Tough question, isn't it? Yeah, but even if Daniel wrote them, he knew Cyrus, you know, in his lifetime, but he didn't know Alexander the Great. He didn't know the Romans, so it was even beyond him then, two kingdoms beyond him. So two of them were prophecy anyway. Why didn't God tell him about the rest of it? I think it does. I've talked to you about, I think, 50 times. I feel like I'm boring you by telling you again, but if I am, just wink at me and I'll quit. The Old Testament saw the present evil age and the coming messianic age, the day of the Lord. It saw just two ages, right? Evil age, coming of the Lord, judgment, messianic age, two ages. Now, I don't think that the Old Testament has many references to the second coming, but has beaucoup references to the first coming. For the Jews thought that it was going to stop one thing and the kingdom was going to come. But what happened? We live in what's called the overlapping, the latter days. From when Jesus was born till Jesus comes again, these kingdoms, we're living in the midst of having God in our hearts, but sin in our lives. We live in the midst of this being the kingdom of God and the kingdom of this world. We live in an overlapping. The Jews didn't see that, you see? And all these kingdoms we know are in this overlapping, right? I believe that when Daniel saw the Roman Empire and the coming of the one called the Ancient of Days and the Son of Man, I think it's a fact that the kingdom of God was in one sense set up in the Roman Empire's days. Now, it wasn't consummated, it's not fulfilled, it's not complete, and I think the little horn is talking about the second coming, if you please. But the Jews didn't see that, and God didn't reveal it to Daniel. Another point of view. Every government is almost for sure based on the same type of government as Rome. You know, many of our laws are based on Roman law, isn't that Gary? Roman law is a place we usually start. We usually don't go back to Moses or Hammurabi. We usually start with Rome. In a real sense, the pattern of the kingdoms of the world are Roman, you know? Now, of course, maybe China's not, but as soon as they hit our culture, they begin to come westernized and like that. So I don't know exactly why, but I think it's this overlapping problem that the Jews didn't see. Now, you see where it talks about, if it's Antiochus Epiphanes, which some say it is, many kings came after him, so it wasn't destroyed when he was alive, the kingdom he had. So I don't think it could be him at all. I think that's a completely false statement. Now, you see where it says in verse 12, an extension of life was granted to him for an appointed period of time. Now, this is not talking about the little horn and the last beast. It's talking about the three previous beasts, aren't they? Right? That verse 12 is talking about the first three beasts. Now, what does it mean they weren't killed right then, but their life was extended for an appointed period of time? Could it be that this fourth kingdom was completely annihilated, completely off the map, completely gone, but the other three kingdoms, the power was taken away from them, although they exist as a national entity? Does that sound good? Huh? Iran? What would the other one be? Greece? Right? What would the other one be? Would they be the same area as Iran? I think that's probably what it's talking about. These countries haven't been annihilated, but was the fourth one just about gone? When Rome fell, boy, she fell, didn't she? And although there's still the national things there like Italy, that's the only thing I can think of. It's some kind of national kind of existence continued. Now, in verse 13, the scene is going to change radically again. We're still in heaven, but something happens. God comes to the Ancient of Days, is sitting on the throne, and all of a sudden something happens. Behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man. Mine has it capitalized. I think that's interpretive right here. I'm not sure it should be capitalized as a title yet. One like a son of man was coming. Now, I want to do two things here, and I know it's getting late. Dadgum. Number one, the deity idea comes from the clouds of heaven. Who rides in the clouds of heaven? How many references do I give you? Okay, let me see. Let me add up to that. On number 21, word study, clouds of heaven, add Revelation 1. Is it 3 or 7? Dadgum. Revelation 1:7. Add that to that. The clouds of heaven is an expression all through the New Testament of Jesus Christ. He ascended back to heaven how? Until the clouds caught him out of his sight. He's coming back again with the holy angels and on the clouds of heaven. Deity. Deity, bang. Next thing, not deity anymore, humanity. There's two words in Hebrew for man. One is the word Adam. It's everywhere except the first chapter of Genesis translated man. In Genesis 1 through 3, I guess, it's the proper name of Adam. But it's the Hebrew word Adam. It means man. It means man like Psalms 8, Psalms 10, Ezekiel. When it says son of man in Ezekiel, it's the word Adam. When in Psalms 8 it speaks about the greatness of man, it's Adam. In Psalms 10, it's Adam. It's not Adam here. It's another word. And it should probably be Nosh or Noosh. Now, this word, it's in verse 13, speaks of man in his frailty, in his weakness, in his ability to get sick and die. Therefore, this is not the title like in Ezekiel, the son of man. Now, Ezekiel is speaking of mankind. And here, I think it's speaking of mankind too. Notice, it doesn't say the son of man was coming. It says one like a son of man. I think it's just saying one like a human was coming. A man was coming in contradistinction from these terrible beasts. Now, the man is going to be the fifth kingdom, isn't it? This one like the son of man. Now, this is Aramaic, not Hebrew. If it was Hebrew, it would be maybe a title. This is Aramaic, and Aramaic doesn't have a definite article. So, this could be a human king. I do not think it's a title for Jesus Christ here. I think it seems deity and humanity combined, which is, of course, what? The incarnation idea of Jesus Christ. This is not a title for him. It's two ways to describe him. Deity, God, and man comes before the Ancient of Days. Notice what happens. Okay, I need to go off into something else just for a minute. Some have said that this idea of the Son of Man, who is this Son of Man? Now, if you'll look at verses 18, 22, and 27, you'll see that every one of those says, and the kingdom was given to who? 18, 22, 27. Saints, plural, right? Saints, verse 18, the saints of the Holy One received the kingdom. Verse 22, Ancient of Days, judgment wasn't passed in favor of the saints of the Most High. They took possession of the kingdom. Verse 27, saints. Now, the ideal is that the saints took the kingdom, while verse 13 says the Son of Man took the kingdom. What's the relationship? Okay, think with me. The beast represents a king as well as a kingdom, don't they? Nebuchadnezzar, as well as the kingdom of Babylon, right? The little horn represents one king as well as a kingdom. So too here. Beautiful picture of the relationship between the Son of God and the children of God. The kingdom is Jesus, but the kingdom is given to us. For you see, we and Jesus Christ are brothers. The saints of God will inherit all that Jesus Christ inherits. We are co-heirs, the New Testament says. Therefore, you see what it's doing? It's saying the saints are going to have the kingdom, plural, but it says the Son of Man is going to have the kingdom. I think it's talking about the same thing. Him, And then over there in 27 it says, His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all His dominion will serve and obey Him. Singular, pronoun, referring to a person. The kingdom belongs to Jesus Christ, but is given to us as co-heirs. Now, you notice down there where it says, verse 18, the saints will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever for all ages to come. Why can't that be a reference to the millennial kingdom? It's never going to end. This kingdom is forever. The millennial kingdom is a limited kingdom, isn't it? It's a time-locked kingdom. Okay, can't be the millennium. Now, notice about waging war with the saints, overpowering them. Isn't it funny in verse 21 that God allows the forces of evil to subjugate His people? This book is written in a time of persecution. The whole setting, so is Revelation. Now, notice in verse 24, it will devour the whole earth, the fourth beast. I think we better back up on that. I think you better see F4:1 where it says Nebuchadnezzar ruled the whole earth. Nebuchadnezzar did not rule the whole earth, did he? He didn't rule the Mayas and the Incas. He didn't rule the Slavic German tribes. He didn't rule China or Asia or the Polynesian kingdoms. He didn't rule the whole earth. But it's a way of expressing a great kingdom. I think the fourth kingdom here is not so much a worldwide kingdom, a clean around the world, as it is a very extensive kind of power. So I think we need to talk about that. Now, notice in verse 25, and will make alterations in times and in law. They go back to this idea of being in Titus Epiphanes, changing the Jewish laws. But I want you to notice that says make alterations in times and in law. That does not necessarily refer to religious law, does it? Or religious times. It refers to time in general, as far as dates and remembering dates, and law in general, not necessarily religious law. Now, very important. This little phrase, time, time, and a half a time, boy, this is where the fight goes. What does that thing mean? My translation, those little stinkers, put in the side, i.e., year. They're saying, this thing means a year. How many of your translations do that in a footnote? Okay? Scofield does it. Who else? New American Standard does it. Does anybody else have something? Does Living Bible make it a year? A year? A year and a half year? 3.5 years? That is completely interpreted. Completely. This little word doesn't always mean year because they are what? They're not, they don't have the same solar year we have. They're on a lunar calendar. But I want to show you something very interesting. Turn on the back of your paper, please. Right underneath number symbolism and put the date related to the second coming. Date related to the second coming. If this is a year, and it's talking about a year and a half a year, or 3.5 years, that is 1,277 days, right? 1,277, put that down. Daniel 7:25, 1,277 days. Daniel 8:14 is going to list a number of evenings and mornings. If you divide them by two, you get 1,150 days. Daniel 11:2 and 13:5 is going to use a thing called 42 months. 42 months is about 1,260 days. Daniel 12:11 has a little thing that says 1,290 days. And then Daniel 12:12 has 1,335 days. I made one mistake, and I'm sorry. When I told you Daniel 11:2 and Daniel 13:5, that should be Revelation. Revelation 11:2 and Revelation 13:5 has 42 months. Now, that's not exactly the number of days, is it? But you catch how close all those different numbers are? They're within 100, less than 100 of each other. Now, what we've got here is not the thing that we can pick dates like October 14th and January 2nd, but we have almost a unanimous kind of vote on how long this times, the times and a half times is. Now, I think it's interpreted to make this a year, but I think with all these other references, that it's a very good choice to make it a year. You see what I'm saying? Because it's so close. 1290, 1260, 1277, 1335, real close, very close. Now, exactly what that means, we'll get into another chapter because it's almost time for me to go home. Now, notice in verse 27 where it says, the word, and all dominions will serve him. You see that at the very last of verse 27? This can't refer to the kingdom being the Jewish nation. Some people say that when it says the saints of the Most High will get the kingdom, dispensationalism now says this refers to the Jewish people only and not the church. Well, I don't buy that. So number one, the word serve in verse 27 is, we have 9 examples of this word being used in Aramaic. Every one of the 9 uses of this word, it's used in reference to deity. When it says serve and obey him, it's not talking about saints. It's talking about this Ancient of Days, and especially the representative, the Son of Man, Jesus, the mediator, okay? The Messiah, if you would. Now, I think that the saints of the Most High, or the Holy One, is referring to the church, Old Testament, New Testament. I think it's talking about all the people of God. You see, I see God having a plan, not for Israel, but I see God having a plan for the redemption of mankind. And everybody who trusts God by faith, Jew or Greek, is in that vast horde of people called the saints of the Most High, Revelation 5. Okay. I think that's it. Golly dog, what a chapter. Got any questions? I think I've hit you with way too much, but I hope you got some of it that'll relate to chapter 8. I told you it's going to be a boogaboo. You just don't hit this without getting into ambiguous passages, different interpretations. But you see, by going into the why of the interpretations, I think we get a clearer picture of biblical presuppositions, don't we? That what you think before you read the text determines sometimes what that text says. You see what I'm saying? Any questions or comments tonight about Daniel and the beast and all? Okay, please read chapter 8 and 9 for next week. I'll just cover 8, but you need to read 8 and 9. Please sit down when you get home or whenever you get a chance to study your Bible, and I want you to outline the kingdoms in chapter 7. Put lion, wings, heart of a man. Okay. Then that's Nebuchadnezzar. Then put leopard, 4 wings, moves fast, all that. And then do the same thing for chapter 8 on those 4 kingdoms. Now, if you'll do this, Daniel will mean something to you. There's an image in chapter 2 that has 4 kingdoms. Write those out. Gold, silver, bronze, iron, and clay. Chapter 2. Chapter 7, 4 kingdoms. What are they? They're the lion, they're the bear, they're the leopard, indescribable animal. Okay? Chapter 8. You're going to have 4 more kingdoms. See if they're going to parallel. Okay? Now, I'll give you a hint. They're not going to parallel. But if you don't do that, you're going to get so confused the time we get through of 8, you're going to say, horns, wheels, wings, teeth. I'll wait to get through Daniel and come back on Wednesday night. So, don't take me. I told you, you couldn't study Daniel Revelation without working at it. Outline these chapters for next week, okay?